Welcome to part four of my discussion with Douglas Cumming on his report on venture exchanges.
Now, one of the things that we at CFA Institute have advocated on a global basis, particularly for small companies, and probably for a little bigger than the companies on the crowdfunding markets, but the idea is to sort of put these companies into venture exchanges, much like the venture exchanges in particularly in Toronto and in London. The idea is to make sure that investors are aware of any potential gaps in critical information, be it governance or financial. So I guess, you know, do you see that there's any, you know, on the basis of your study here as well as your studies elsewhere, is there any sort of benefit that investors gain from having companies, from being able to distinguish between those companies that have those lower reporting requirements and therefore are on venture exchanges relative to, you know, just sort of everybody's on there and maybe some people have, you know, everybody's on the same exchanges and some people may have different reporting requirements? Is there any advantage to this?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we've done a number of studies on this in Canada and other contexts. And I think the best way to characterize investors and these issuing companies on the lower tier exchanges is that, in respect to the investors, that investors get involved if they have what we would refer to in academics as a preference for skewness. And so what that would mean? So in practical terms, what does that mean? Is that investors, essentially, if they understand what's going on, which we believe for the most part they should and would, is that they recognize that there's on average a high chance that, you know, a typical company is not going to do very well, but at the same time, there's a chance that one or two of those companies that you invest in are going to do enormously well, right? So there's going to be a few outliers that will make investments on these lower tier exchanges extremely profitable,
right?
And so it's not the average company, but it's, you know, those outliers that get people excited. And so folks looking for those outliers are, you know, investors looking for those outliers are going to be attracted to investing on those exchanges. But on average, so if you hold a portfolio of all the companies on a venture exchange, on average, recent data, and this has been examined in many contexts, are very consistent with the view that the average performance is not very good. But if you have ability to find that outlier or outliers, then you have tremendous profit potential. And again, these junior exchanges, companies typically trade at lower prices and often don't do very well. But if you get the one that goes up, it can be tremendously profitable. So that's why investors like to get involved. But from the issuing company's perspective, the main thing that companies need to think about is that if you list early, so you have a public reporting requirement early on in your life cycle, then that can be quite costly in a few respects. There's firstly the direct costs of being a reporting issuer can be expensive. So you have to file information reports on a timely basis, keep investors apprised of what your company is doing with audited financial statements and the like, and then there's heavy monitoring that goes on. So if you have analysts following your stock, and you're frequently having to tell people what you're doing, so if you want to maintain some level of secrecy about what the company is doing that's difficult or impossible as a public reporting issuer. And so those are some of the costs. Then the other type of cost that comes up is the when you first list on a junior exchange, as an IPO, what the typical thing is that the first day price that you're able to list at tends to be much lower relative to the end of day first price. So the beginning of day first price is way less than the end of day first price, which is a phenomenon known as underpricing. And it's like going to a store, and the store could sell something to you for, say, $10, but it only charges, I don't know, $8 or $5, right? And so that underpricing is a cost to the company. And all evidence that's ever been generated on this is very consistent with the view that the lower the listing standards on the exchange, the higher the degree of underpricing. So it's more costly in that underpricing sense for new startups to list on junior exchanges. And then the longer term performance, that on average, as we said, tends to be less.
Well, what kind of investors are drawn to the venture exchanges?
Oftentimes retail investors. It's actually hard to sort of say between retail and institutional investors. Some institutional investors might have restrictions on them in terms of investing in smaller cap venture-like companies.
Well, but it seems that they would usually sort of prefer to, I mean, just given the size of the positions that they end up having to take, that they would need to have a certain amount of liquidity to be able to manage those holdings so that, you know,
absolutely,
they're not moving the market significantly, whereas these smaller companies, even a quite small position could end up having significant market effect on pricing.
Yeah, exactly. So, no question. And so if you have substantial stakes in the smaller companies, then trying to liquidate those stakes could move markets in a way that, say, if you're trying to sell off, then that could have a dramatic negative influence on the price of a smaller listed firm, that's for sure. And but you know, again, more generally, for the retail folks, those that get involved in the junior companies definitely have this preference for skewness, as I said. Another way to say it more informally is they're looking for lottery tickets. But I think that might be in some way a bit of an unfair characterization, although that's been frequently said in the past. But when we say lottery ticket or preference for skewness, essentially we're saying they're looking for those outlier companies, and certainly they're out there. You just have to do your research to figure out which ones they are. But you look for these outlier companies that are going to do very well and grow, become larger companies in the future. You got to remember that the larger companies all were once smaller companies.
Oh, wow.
So just figuring out which of those companies are going to become the next great success. And if you buy in when they're a smaller issuer, then that could be tremendously profitable.
Okay. And then just one final question. Now, you and your co-author suggest that mandating exchanges to provide greater transparency, you suggest that there should be a mandate that exchanges provide greater transparency about these misreporting and fraud among their listed companies. What do you think would be the benefit to investors from this kind of reporting?
If we step back for a sec, we first don't think that investors are aware of differences in detected fraud rates across exchanges. So when we went to look for this information, as I said, we couldn't find it, and even today we're still unaware of any other source where we get statistics on detected fraud rates by exchange. And so investors have a choice as to where they want to invest. So if you want to invest in a NASDAQ company, an ISE company, or a company in one of the international markets, that's a choice as to where you put your money. And if there were statistics that told you, well, if you invest, you know, on such and such exchange, that exchange has a big number of the errors, say 3% of their companies on that exchange have a chance of being caught for some aspect of fraud, then that's very value relevant information, and securities commissions and the like have this data, so they could report that type of thing to investors to enable investors to be better informed. And the reason why that type of thing is informative is that when companies are caught with fraud, then the share prices of those companies inevitably goes down, and goes down by a lot. So investors' wealth, you know, is significantly impacted by the probability of fraud.
And it adds to that skewness that you were talking about a little earlier.
Exactly. Yeah. On the downside, right? And so, so if investors are properly pricing their securities, then one aspect of that would be the probability that the company is going to be detected as a fraudulent company, and so that would be a non-trivial thing to put into a pricing model that would influence where investors decide to invest and how much they pay for their investments. And so I should say academics are just like folks at the CFA Institute, right? We believe information is value informative, and reporting something like fraud by exchange would be very value informative and certainly feasible to do, and that type of information should be made available to investors.
Would the advent or the increasing sort of electronic nature of markets and the markets being more dispersed, would that have any effect upon would this kind of exchange-based reporting on trouble sort of remain relevant in that in this regard? I mean, with these sort of market changes that are occurring.
Yeah, no, I think it would be very relevant, and you know, that brings up another issue of other things that exchanges can report about themselves to enable investors to more accurately compare different exchanges. So to get into other work that I know the CFA Institute, amongst others, are looking at, or an issue of, for example, high-frequency trading. And so the more that investors are aware about differences across exchanges, about who's participating in the exchange, both in terms of investors and their issuers, who's caught doing bad things, both in terms of their investors and issuers, all those types of statistics can, if they're reported and reported properly, can be very informative to investors as well as issuing companies in terms of where they want to list, and that would make capital markets more informative, more competitive in terms of getting exchanges competing with each other, and make investors better off because they're better informed, and so I can see no downside in not reporting that type of information. The only thing that might make exchanges, for instance, reluctant to report that type of thing would be if they don't like what the statistics say, or
that's when it's most valuable, right?
right. So, but for instance, the SEC has this information on their webpage. It just takes forever to go and figure it out yourself. So we had hired a bunch of folks to help us gather this data, thousands of hours of data gathering work. So it's not easy to gather, but you know, with that type of information on the SEC's webpage and other data sources. If people put it together, report it, you know, it can be done, it should be done, and make investors better off. There's no downside or cost to investors for having that type of information disclosed. It really should be disclosed.
Copyright 2013 CFA Institute. This program is designed to give accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is distributed with the understanding that CFA Institute is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, investment, or other expert advice. If legal advice or other expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.